This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
We have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast. Welcome to Utopia.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in to my winter wonderland. It is my living room, Christmas tree over the left shoulder, other sort of lit up, pathetic Charlie Brown tree lit up over my right shoulder. It's a Tuesday night as I record this. You're probably receiving this in wherever it is you get your podcast on a Wednesday. Regardless, it's great to be with you. My name is Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610. Great to be with you. 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. is where you can find Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. This podcast is, you can find it wherever it is you found it. Obviously, you made it here. So you stumbled across it or you've subscribed to it. Either way, I am very grateful. If you have not subscribed to it yet, feel free to hit that subscribe button so you get it automatically as we continue through this bumpy road of a Texans football season. 7-5 on the season, losing four out of their last six. Jacksonville, scary game coming up Sunday, because the one thing the Texans have proven that they will do is they are not afraid to lose to a team with two wins. Week 9, Jets, 2-6, Texans lose. Week 11, no, sorry, 12, Titans, 2-9, 2-8, 2-8. They lose. And now in come the Jaguars, fresh off a bye week at 2-9. And 5 or 6 point underdogs, depending on where you're looking for it. But we'll preview that game later this week. If you guys listen to the podcast, you know I announced in the previous podcast the recap of the loss to the Titans. We're on a Monday, Wednesday, Friday schedule here through the next several weeks. The holiday week with Christmas will be a little funky. But Monday, recap of the previous game. Wednesday, mailbag. We're going to do a mailbag today. If you want to hit me with an email, won't get into this episode, but to make it into future episodes, houmailbag@gmail.com. And then Friday, the preview episode of the next game. So Friday, we'll have a preview of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We'll dig into them a little bit more. But I'm just nervous about every game now, the way this team is playing, quite frankly. There's no promises with this team of prosperity. They treat prosperity in-game like it's an STD. Up 7-0, 18 seconds into the game, and then early in the second quarter, they're down 17-7. So this is a team that has zero killer instinct right now, does not like prosperity. They make a lot of dumb mistakes. I don't know if they're poorly coached, but they play like a team that's poorly coached. I really want to keep my lips from saying the words, a D'Amico Ryans team is poorly coached, because I love D'Amico Ryans, and I think he's a good coach. But eventually you are what you're doing, and this team plays like a poorly coached team in all three phases, really. I mean, the special teams has been okay this year, but even they made some silly penalties on Sunday. Obviously, the defense, if you don't have Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson out there, that is a piss-poor defensive performance. Wasn't great anyways, but without the 8 sacks, my God, they might have hung 50 on you, the Titans. And then obviously the offense is a train wreck right now. No touchdown in the second half again on Sunday. Just 7 second half touchdowns all season long. It's a mess right now. And yet here they sit at 7-5 at the top of the division. So we'll get into the mailbag in just a second. But those are my general thoughts. How improbable was the Titans win given the 8 sacks and the pick 6 that the Texans got defensively? Glad you asked. Mike Sando of The Athletic, I'll credit him with this stat. Since 1960, there have been 36 instances of a quarterback taking 8 sacks and throwing a pick 6 in a game. 36. In those games, the quarterback who sustained those sacks and threw the pick 6 has won 3 times out of 36. They're 3-33. Prior to Sunday, they were 2-33. The Houston Texans continue to find ways to lose games that statistics tell us they should have a 90-plus percent chance of winning. Plus 3 turnover margin, you have a 93-94% chance of winning those games. Since like 1982 or something like that. And the Texans have lost 2 games like that this year. So they're a mess right now. I can't get flowery and optimistic about it. Any hope that you have of them turning this thing around offensively is just hope that they're going to snap out of it. Because if it was fixable, which I was told early in the year, all these things are fixable, then it would have been fixed by now. It's fucking week 13. Fix the goddamn shit. Jesus. So I guess the other question would be, how improbable is them losing the division? Right now, according to playoffstatus.com, the Texans have an 89% chance of making it to the postseason. Does it feel to you like they have an 89% chance of making it to the postseason? To me, if you feel like it does, that's more about you having zero confidence in the Colts than having any confidence in the Texans right now. So the Colts, for what it's worth, are going to be favored in at least four of their five games. The look-ahead line I saw had them as a 2.5-point favorite in Denver. I think that site's got to be off. I should Google that between now and the end of the podcast just to see if that's accurate. But at any rate, the Colts have a fairly easy schedule the rest of the way. The Texans, they do not. They've got the Jags this Sunday. That's a game they should win, much like the Titans and the Jets games. But then they play the Dolphins, Chiefs, and Ravens in an 11-day span. That's brutal. So I don't feel like they've got an 89%. I feel like the favorite is they're going to win the division. I do not feel like they have an 89% chance of winning the division. As far as news with the team, the Jalen Petrie situation, D'Amico Ryans, I think, kind of leaked something that he wouldn't have said in a press conference when he was talking to Mark Vandermeer and John Harris on the coaches show, that he said Jalen's going to be out for a couple of weeks. I hope that's true. The reports have been that they're still determining if he needs surgery on his torn pectoral muscle. There are examples of guys playing through a torn pectoral muscle, like through a non-surgically repaired torn pectoral muscle. A lot of people in Texans land point back to J.J. Watt tearing his pec in 2019 in week 8. He actually underwent surgery on that, but was able to make it back by the postseason that year. That was about a 2-month period between surgery and postseason, maybe a little more. It'd be a miracle if the Texans are still playing football in 2 months from now. A miracle. That would mean that they're deep into the postseason. Don't see that right now. But I am willing to have my mind changed by good performance over the next few weeks. I am open to it. All right, let's get into the mailbag. HOUmailbag@gmail.com. HOUmailbag@gmail.com. Rick Tindall weighs in early. Rick's a good friend, so I'll let him bat lead off. It's a simple email. Dear Sean, how in the flying fuck has this team won 7 games? They're very good in close games. At least they've generally been very good in close games under D'Amico Ryans. They've got an elite pass rush. They've forced a shit ton of turnovers. And when Nico Collins was healthy early in the season, that's when they piled up a lot of those wins. So their great players have been playing great. That would be my general answer to your question, Rick, is that if you list the 8 to 10 best players on the team, they've largely been playing pretty well this year. CJ Stroud was playing really well in the first 6 games. And then the Green Bay game happened, and that's when things flipped because this offensive line sucks ass. So that's how. I mean, how in the flying fuck have they won 7 games? They're 7-5. It's not like they're that's a question you ask about Kansas City. How in the flying fuck have they won 10? I mean, the Texans are a play away from, like, if Anthony Richardson doesn't throw a pick before the half to Jalen Petrie, the Texans are 6-6 right now. They're a .500 football team that's been on the better side of luck this season. That's how. Ben in the South. Oh, by the way, no France in the North today. He actually texted me to tell me he wasn't emailing. I love when people RSVP to the mailbag. Hey, no email this week, Sean, but France in the North sent me a nice text, so that was good, wishing me a happy Thanksgiving. He lives in Canada. They celebrate Thanksgiving in October up there. That's when their Mayflower came over in October from England or France or wherever. But Ben in the South says, remember when Sloak was a hot head coaching candidate and we were so excited about him returning? I do, Ben. I do remember that. It was back in February of last year. He says, remember when we all thought this was going to be the next version of the greatest show on turf? I remember when I thought it'd be a high-powered offense. There was still skepticism about the offensive line, I think, and I think that was warranted. But yes, if your point is, remember when it was Diggs and Dell and Nico and everybody's, this offense is going to run roughshod. I do. I remember that. Remember, it was the preseason. It was in July. Yeah. Is this offense the biggest disappointment in the NFL this season is the question. That's a great question. Is the Texans offense the biggest disappointment in the NFL? The 49ers are 5-6 right now. I'll point that out. They've been a general disappointment. I would say the Bengals have been a disappointment. I parsing out sides of the football, I don't know. I'd have to dig a little bit deeper. But this offense has been a massive, massive disappointment. Is it the biggest disappointment in the NFL? Put it this way. If one of the one of the writers for NFL.com who writes those like 10 biggest this or 8 biggest that or 8 most this, you know, one of those pieces that lists superlatives, good or bad, if they were to list, say, that the 8 biggest disappointments in the NFL this season and the Texans offense was not on there, if Bobby Slowick in some way was not on there, I would be shocked. So, yeah, it's a great question. It's a good point. Jason and Leander, isn't it time to say this highly penalized, underperforming, ill-prepared team is poorly coached? Jason, I just said I don't want to say that. Why are you trying to get me to form my lips to say that? I love D'Amico Ryans. But, yeah, if like 12 games into the season, I think that's the thing. Like, poorly coached, look, you are what your record is, and they make a lot of mistakes that poorly coached teams make. No question. So they're not well coached. I'll put it that way. Here's what I would say is that if you listen to the postgame show this week with me and Clint Sterner, we had Jimmy Ward on, and Jimmy Ward, almost unprompted, said that they've been playing down to the level of their competition this season. And I think it's a fair point. That's how it's felt. The problem is that we're 12 games in now. We're about to be 13 weeks into the season. Are we not past the point of the season where it's not you're playing down to the level of your competition, it's you are at that level of the competition? There's this perception that, well, we're committing dumb penalties and we're making silly mistakes and CJ's making poor decisions. That allows us to play down to the level of competition as if those plays don't count. No, those are things that bad teams do, right? I mean, the Colts, Anthony Richardson, I just brought it up right before the half. They choose to throw the ball. He throws an interception to Jalen Petrie. Does that make them are they a significantly shittier team than the Texans? No, like that's the same. CJ made the same mistake on Sunday against who are they playing? It's the Titans. Threw an interception right before the half, a horrible interception. Now, thankfully, the Texans defense was able to get a couple sacks and force a long field goal, because that's the only thing they've got going for them these days is their defensive line and their pass rush. But and here's the part about poorly coached. I don't know how good they are at finding solutions. They found none yet. Their solution on offense is to just keep doing the same shit over and over and over and over again. So I think that's a big question about D'Amico Ryans. I think there's a lot of good that comes with D'Amico Ryans, the head coach. Probably the primary thing is that he's still a pretty good defensive coordinator. That's evident. I think this is a good defense. It's a good defense that had kind of a shaky day against Tennessee, but overall, this is a good defense. That's a positive about D'Amico Ryans. We have no idea how good D'Amico is at solving problems, like systemic problems with the team. So far, it's been to just say, we need to execute better and trot Bobby Slowick back out there with his dog shit offense. Salty today, man. Not in the mood for it, but I'll keep it moving. Chris in Louisville. This is Chris from Louisville again, and I need you to talk me off the ledge. Okay, here I go. Well, hopefully, I mean, this email came in a few days ago. Chris, I hope you're still with us. This team is a pumpkin, all of it. Self-sabotage. Like you say, no killer instinct. That's right, I've said that. Kaimi can't hit a field goal, but really we can't score a effing TD on offense in the second half. Yeah, let me stop there. Like, people bring up Kaimi missing that 28-yarder, and that is a horrible, horrible thing. They never should have been in that position in the first place. I'm not excusing Kaimi for the field goal. I'm just saying, like, people who are pointing to that as the reason they lost, go back and watch the whole game. Continuing with Chris's email, we expected the defense to be elite all season to bail everyone out. Didn't happen this time, but really what concerns me the most is the slow unraveling of C.J. Stroud. Don't know if you saw the TV copy of him after the second interception. He looked checked out, and Levis throws a pick six, and they show him, I think it was Slowick on the sidelines trying to cheer him up. His defense bailed him out with a pick six. Shouldn't that have pumped him up? I admit I haven't seen any of this, so I don't really have a comment on it. C.J.'s body language has not been great over the last few weeks. I think he's shouldering a lot. I think he's really internalizing a lot of this right now. I think it's a form of accountability, but I hate to echo something that really agitated a lot of people when CJ said it, but it would be nice to see him having fun again. It'd be nice to see him smile again. CJ lost his smile, much like Shawn Michaels back in February of 1997 when he forfeited the WWF title because he lost his smile. Or he had a drug habit, one or the other. But he said he lost his smile. That's what I choose to believe. Neil in Liverpool. I'm not mad, Sean. I'm just disappointed. Sounds like a parent. This season had so much promise, but the Texans are not fun to watch at all. Every game is so frustrating, especially with this boring, predictable offense. Neil is not saying anything I disagree with so far. I was actually planning to fly to Houston, Neil says, to attend a game next September. Now I'm thinking, screw it. I'll come over in March for the Astros season opener instead. Neil, I'm not going to tell you how to spend your money. Coming for opening day here with the Astros, I think it would be a delightful option. I think doing both would be great, but I don't know how much, you know, I don't want to pocket watch you or anything like that. I would say let's give it the rest of the season. Let's see what happens in the postseason. Let's see how the schedule lays out. Let's see what moves they make. I wouldn't make any September decisions right now. Let's let it play out a little bit here. I'm not saying I'm overly optimistic, but I'm saying I understand how the NFL works. And look, this time last year, it was 11 games into the season, but the Eagles were 10-1 this time last year. And they just went down the toilet. You know, Jacksonville was 8-3 and they went down the toilet. The Texans, you know, they can, and I know those are examples of teams that were on a high, and they went, you know, nosedive into the ground, but it works both ways. You know what I mean? Like it worked like Buffalo last year, for example. Now they went on a tear at the end of the year by firing their offensive coordinator. They won their last six games of the year, I believe, after firing Ken Dorsey. So maybe there's a lesson in there somewhere, D'Amico. My point is this, like five games, is it five they've got left? Five. That's still a lot of games. And it's games against teams that you have a real opportunity to make an impression, you know? Speaking of which, it's a good segue into this email from Chris in the ATL. He says, it's a damn good thing the NFL's playoff teams are determined by records and not a selection committee, because the Texans would be on the outside looking in. If the NFL did have a selection committee, what would be your selling points to put the Texans in as a playoff contender? I'm reaching for anything positive here, Sean, after that debacle versus the Titans. Give me some hope. I would say this, Chris, is that if they, first of all, seven teams in each conference make the playoffs. So this would be a debate. Really, it'd be a debate of the Texans versus the Colts or the Broncos. Or like right now, the Broncos are the seven seed in the AFC and the Colts are the eight seed. So it's actually a pretty easy argument. Like my argument would be they beat the Colts twice and they deserve to be in as the seven seed ahead of the eight seed Colts. So as long as the playoffs have as many teams as you're talking about now, seeding would be interesting. The Texans are going to be the four seed because they're going to win their division in all likelihood. I would seed the Texans right now as the last team in the AFC. I think they're behind the Broncos. I think they're behind the Chargers. I think they're behind the Steelers and Ravens and obviously the Bills and the Chiefs as well. I think they'd be a playoff team, even if there was a committee, but I think they would be the last team in right now. Mike says, well, today's debacle of the Titans game was as bad as it gets for me. A few weeks ago, we said O-line was the main problem, and since then, there have been some changes there. We also said not having Nico as a factor, he's now back, but now we're saying CJ is not the same as last year. Does that mean the QB coach deserves blame also? Who else can we blame? I feel like we need to blame and fire a few people to shake this team up. They need something. They definitely need a shakeup. And I don't know, like firing people, maybe taking duties away from Bobby Slowick. Like you're essentially, if you take play calling duties away from Bobby Slowick, you've essentially fired him. Like you don't come back from that if you're an OC. Does Gerard Johnson deserve some blame also? Sure. Why not? He's the QB coach and the QB is not very good right now. So yes, he's got to find a way to help fix this thing. He's sort of the QB whisperer in all these guys. So yes, he absolutely deserves blame. We can't be afraid to blame people, okay? And I'm part of the problem. I don't want to say they're poorly coached because I like D'Amico Ryans, but all evidence is this is not a well-coached football team right now. Joe Q, two quick questions. Was CJ's safety at the same end zone as Orlovsky or the opposite one? I don't know if that's tongue-in-cheek. I heard some people comparing CJ and the safety he took at the end of that Titans game to Dan Orlovsky running out the back of the end zone. I'd have to go back and watch Orlovsky's. I don't seem to remember Orlovsky being under nearly as much heat as CJ was in that moment. Orlovsky just rolled out and just ran like three steps out the back of the end zone. CJ really didn't have a ton of room to operate. So I don't think that's a perfect comparison there. Joe Q's second question, is it time to drop your two favorite excuses for CJ playing bad football? Ooh, Joe Q holding my feet to the fire. What are my excuses? Excuse number one, he's facing too much pressure. Will Levis, an established he sucks guy, took 8 sacks but threw it better than CJ. Yeah, he did in that game. Like, I mean, if we're going to cherry pick one Will Levis game where he had 4 gigantic chunk plays as some sort of evidence that CJ and the pressure he's facing, we should just ignore it. That's silly. Joe Q, you're better than that. You're better than cherry picking one Will Levis performance as some sort of evidence that saying CJ is facing too much pressure is some sort of excuse. This offensive line fucking sucks, Joe Q. And I know you're a bit of an expert on offensive line play. I know. So don't say that's an excuse. CJ looked fine the first 6 games of the year, and then that Green Bay game happened, and then that Indy game happened, and then that Jets game happened, and it's affected him. So the pressure is not an excuse. That's a reason. Excuse number two, no Nico Collins. That one made me twitch all along, like Davis only got to target Nico 66 times in 2022. Was Nico's absence the reason for the Davis replace-o-meter? CJ had full Nico today, and he still threw 2 horrible game-losing picks. I'm not saying CJ is playing well by any means. So keep in mind, if Laremy Tunsil holds his water on a play, Nico Collins has a 77-yard touchdown to open the game against the Cowboys. If they don't do a double shift in the Titans game, Nico scores the game-winning touchdown. So, and let's add too that there's been no digs. Like, Tank Dell's been your number one receiver for a big chunk of the season with neither of those two guys, or at least a decent chunk of the season, at least 2 or 3 games. So I don't think those are excuses. Joe Q goes on to say CJ's an average NFL starter right now. I agree with that. I don't know why he is. I just think we need to acknowledge it. He is acknowledged. Guys playing better football than CJ right now. Warning, Sean's head might be about to explode. Bo Nix. Bryce Young, Tua, Sam Darnold, Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson. Yes, in this small period of time, CJ's not played well. Why would my head explode? I know, Joe Q, I know you like to think that I'm this QB elitist and that I overvalue the QB position, but I'm also not like so dug in that I bury my head in the sand and go off of reputation for guys when it comes to evaluating a period of time. Okay. So I'm going to move on to the next email. Milton Wade, what is the issue with getting the play call into CJ? These guys are always up against the clock because they can't get a play call in from the sidelines. Can somebody tell Dalton Schultz to block someone with a different colored jersey? Fair request, Milton, for Dalton Schultz. Why are they always up against the play clock? I don't know. The most embarrassing thing was that whole 4th-and-1 scenario where they were thinking about going for it. CJ's looking for a play, and then they throw the punt team in there with like 15 seconds left on the play clock. Again, stuff that badly coached teams do. All right. Ryan and the Shug, nice coverage so far. Way to keep us entertained as the Texans slip into mediocrity. You're welcome, Ryan. I think we're all processing this in different ways. Some are rightfully pissed. I'm numb at this point. Won't shock me if we miss the playoffs. Question, how worried are you about a collapse in the second half of the season, considering we don't do jack squat in the second half of games? I am worried. If they lose to the Jacksonville Jaguars on Sunday, I think it's curtains for this season. Especially if Indianapolis is able to beat New England. Now you're talking about a 1-game lead, momentum shifting, and a team that will have lost 5 of 7 and the last 2 to Tennessee and Jacksonville with a Jets loss in there. Are you fucking kidding me? Other questions from Ryan on D'Amico letting the offense off the hook. I found this especially egregious considering that part of the offense's job is to eat clock sometimes, not just score. Case in point, Detroit, if we limit their second half possessions, they don't complete the comeback. Wholeheartedly agree. It's not just that they're not scoring points. It's if you go look at their drive chart, it's 3 and out, 3 and out, 4 plays, punt. It's awful. It's awful. What is the chain of accountability here? Are you inclined to say it's top down or bottom up? In other words, is the head coach down to the players, or is it bottom up, O-line coach, up to the head coach? If I'm pinpointing a position group, there's no question the offensive line gets the blame from me 100%. They're the reason they can't run the football. They are the trigger for this janky version of CJ Stroud that we've had for a month now. I fully and wholeheartedly blame the offensive line and by proxy, their position coach Bobby Slowick. And now we're at a stage of the season where this is all D'Amico Ryan's problem. This is not something where D'Amico's the defensive guy. He's delegated to Bobby. You're the head coach. This is your problem. Fun question to lighten the mood. Oh, that's good. I need one of these. What's your top three Thanksgiving and Christmas foods, mains, sides, desserts? How do they match up head to head? Okay. Now, here's the thing. Thanksgiving and Christmas are different menus in our house. We go to Amy's parents' house for all these holidays. So Thanksgiving, we're a little more traditional. It's turkey and ham. Christmas, we have a gigantic prime rib that is amazing. So I would say if I was making a dream team of combined Thanksgiving and Christmas foods, I would go prime rib, a few slices of dark meat turkey, some form of pasta, either macaroni and cheese or ziti. My mother-in-law is Italian. She makes a great ziti for Thanksgiving and Christmas, both. Like the rolls, the good, like sweet dinner rolls, mashed potatoes for sure. I would put like one like spoonful of either green bean casserole or something green on the plate just to feel less guilty. I would immediately eat that just to get it out of there so I can enjoy the rest of the meal. And then dessert, I go cheesecake for dessert, man. I'm not a pumpkin pie guy. My mother-in-law makes a really good like chocolate cream pie that's excellent. I forget if she does it for all the holidays or just one of them, but that's kind of where I'm at right now. If I'm turkey v. ham, it's a draw. I like them both, man. I like them both. Ham, boy, I was going to say ham is better for leftovers, but no, man. A good turkey sandwich? I mean, I declare them both the winner, man. That's a 60-minute Broadway draw for me. Love the Thanksgiving questions. Jeff in New Jersey, long email about Nick Caserio and a lot of the things Nick has said on Texans All Access and on Payne and Pendergast. I'm gonna skip right down to your question, Jeff, just for sake of time. I appreciate you, first-time emailer. I appreciate you emailing. Says, I'm sorry for the long rant. I'll end it with a question. Do you believe D'Amico has it within him to fire one of his best friends in Bobby Slowick either this season or the offseason? It needs to be done. I won't say it needs to be done yet. It's trending in that direction for sure. And let's pretend that this continues through the rest of the regular season and that it is a firing, like he is fire-worthy Bobby Slowick. If he doesn't have it within him to do it, he just shouldn't be a head coach in the NFL. So do I believe he has it within him? I have no idea because he hasn't had to do that yet. To my knowledge, D'Amico hasn't had to really fire anybody yet. I mean, they let Jacques Césaire walk in the offseason as a D-line coach, but I don't think that was a firing. And this is more significant. You're talking about a coordinator who D'Amico has history with that came into the league together with San Francisco as quality control coaches. Not came into the league, but they really got their coaching careers off the ground sitting next to one another there in the building in San Francisco. If Bobby Slowick deserves to be fired and D'Amico can't fire him, he shouldn't be the head coach of an NFL football team, period, end of subject. That's not mean. That's not shade. That's not me being overly negative. That's a fact of being in management. If someone deserves to be fired, you got to fire them. Your job is to do what's best for the team. I am willing to let it play out over the last five games only because Bobby's not getting fired in season. I don't think. And there's a bye week coming up. You know, if they go out and they don't score in the second half against Jacksonville, they lose this game. Or even if they win it, but it's like, you know, 16-13 or something like that. The result of this game should not factor, like the result on the scoreboard, who wins, who loses, should not factor in to the evaluation of Bobby Slowick. And Bobby Slowick needs to be under a microscope right now. So, no, the Bobby Slowick should be evaluated on how the offense does, not the end result of the game. My fear is that D'Amico is a win is a win head coach. And if we're winning, and everybody's doing their job sort of thing. That's my fear. I don't have any evidence one way or the other as to whether he's that or not, but I read into his overly positive demeanor and the way that he doesn't seem to fret about how many close games this team plays. He just seems to be like, that's this league. You know, you make a play, every game comes down to this. No, it doesn't. There are blowouts, D'Amico. There are allowed to be blowouts. All right, a couple more questions than I am going to get. Bobby says, do you think the honeymoon period between Caserio, Ryans, and the city of Houston is officially over after last Sunday? I think the honeymoon's been over for a while. And that doesn't mean that everybody's down on all these guys. I've said the honeymoon's over a few times. Like when they went 0-2 to start the season and they were embarrassed by the Colts, I said on the postgame show, the honeymoon's over. And then obviously the love was rejuvenated and they went on to win a division. I would say the honeymoon is over period for the honeymoon is over moment for this season was the Jets game on Thursday night. You go into that Jets game, 6-2. The Jets are reeling. They haven't won a game with an interim head coach. Aaron Rodgers has been a disaster. And not only do you lose the game, but you let Aaron Rodgers have the one good half of football that he's had all season long against you. Three touchdown drives, boom, 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 in the second half. That was, to me, if you know, the honeymoon gets rejuvenated every year. Everybody goes into the season with hope. The honeymoon is over moment for this team this year, Jets game. Jets game. That's a good question for the show tomorrow. I'll ask Seth and see what he says. All right, BK is putting BK sent me an email here where he's asking me to sing. I'm not doing it, BK. I'm not in the mood to sing. Sorry. Why do the Texans make things so complicated? Avril Lavigne, I can't do it. BK, I love you. I'm not in the mood to sing. Sorry. This mailbag's put me in a bad mood. It's not you guys. It's the Texans. Last email, Neil in Philly. That's just what we need, a Philly person to lighten the mood. Started listening to Utopia this past offseason. It's become my go-to for the inside scoop on the Texans. Oh, Neil, you're awesome. My mom's whole side of the family's from Philly, so I'm allowed to make fun of Philly people. Neil, the rare, upbeat Philly person. Love it. Love to see it. Neil says, I have a theory about the Texans' offensive woes, and I want your take. In September, there was an article profiling CJ saying, and he even adds a link to it, saying Slowik and D'Amico gave him more command of the offense this year. His decision-making isn't what it was last year. CJ will get there, but did they push too far? And now the catch-up can't go back into the bottle. Thanks for always bringing it. Neil, I appreciate you. I do think, I don't know all about like how much power CJ has, and I've seen at different times this year when there have been plays that have gotten everybody agitated or angry, I've seen people report that, well, CJ checked into that play. That's all well and good. It just looks like they're trying to do things that are way too complicated for the group that they've got out there. So I'm kind of touching back on BK wanting me to sing about things being so complicated. So yeah, I think there's, you know, there's all that talk about after last year they could take the offense from a 101 level to a 301 level. You know what I mean? And sorry, I'm changing my TV here to, I got the office on E. I'm changing my TV to the college football playoff ranking show. There we go. Because I'm almost done with you guys here. I think it's been a disastrous year for Bobby Slowik. I think that's how we end this mailbag here. This was almost an all Bobby Slowik mailbag. And I'm here for it. I just need I need them to start playing good football again. As do all of you. All right, that was the mailbag edition of the show. I appreciate all of you. If you want to email the show, the email address has been at the bottom of this screen the whole time on YouTube. But if you're listening on just an auditory version of the podcast, houmailbag@gmail.com. A quick reminder again to subscribe to the podcast. Give us a rating. Give us a review. Hopefully you've enjoyed my winter wonderland in which I've been answering your questions. I really love all of you emailing the questions, and I love that we get new emailers every week. I really enjoy the compliments about you guys seeing this as one of your go-tos for Texans content. And let's keep it that way. All right. I promise to do my part. You guys do yours. Share this with a friend. Share it with your Texan friends. On Thanksgiving, this will be the last time I talk to all of you before Thanksgiving. Don't hesitate to take your phone and just put it in the middle of the table and just play this mailbag in the middle of the table. Hopefully your family does not mind a lot of F's and S's and fucks and this and that. Really appreciate all you guys. Appreciate Anthony Irwin, my producer, for getting the podcast out to each and every one of you in a timely fashion. Until later this week, where we preview the Jacksonville Jaguars. Oh, look at that. This thing's been pushing my ear. I looked like a bald Andrew Siciliano with one ear this whole podcast. Big thanks to all of you. Big thanks to Anthony Irwin. Let's go get it. Happy Thanksgiving. Eat, drink, be merry. We'll see you Friday. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.